welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levillier. Classic comedy coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear The Jack Benny Show. But right now, it's Fibber McGee and Molly. Jim and Marion Jordan star in this early NBC broadcast from January 26th, 1943.
Here's the Johnson Wax program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coats present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. I was glancing over one of the country's leading newspapers, and I noticed an article called Keeping Your House in Tune with the Times. You know, it made me feel right at home, for this is what I read. Preserving and protecting the surfaces around your house was once the sensible thing for a good housewife to do. Now it's a case of preserve or do without. The situation isn't as bad as it sounds if you take advantage of wax in any of its forms. Wax is not only a great preservative, but it's also a great time saver. For wax surfaces are more easily dusted because the dirt and dust remain on top and don't penetrate the layer of wax. Well, now, doesn't that sound just like H. Wilcox talking about Johnson's Wax? I must remember to write them a letter. They've really got the right idea. There comes a tide in the affairs of men when they think they can write a book. Well, the tide is in at 79 Wistful Vista. And here, busily filling page after page of scratch paper, we find that persistent proponent of pithy prose, that peerless perpetrator of punchy paragraph, Mr. McGee of Fibber McGee and Molly.
So, grasping her in his strong arms, he kissed her tenderly on the forehead as she ran her slender fingers through his dark, curly hair, which she had first took his hat off so she could. Then, as a knock came at the door...
McGee, I never heard such drivel in my life. What are you reading?
I ain't reading. I'm writing.
You're what?
I'm writing a book.
So that's what you've been doing the last few days.
Betcha.
And I thought you were going over the household accounts.
Household accounts, my clavicle. Don't you worry about them, Molly. When the dough starts rolling in from this book, we'll have so much money, the government won't know what to do with it. Now, let's see. Where was I? Oh, yes. I was just getting to the place where my heroine, Maisie Laprine, has just met Lieutenant Fragwell.
Just met him?
Yeah.
Last I heard, he was taking her into his strong, curly arms and was kissing her.
Well, it was love at first sight. You see, he was coming down the street on roller skates while she was cleaning the front steps, and she swept him off his feet.
Oh.
Ah, I got some cute dialogue there.
Oh, I'll bet you have.
But the plot really gets torrid a little later on. This is a love story that'll have every woman in America dripping mascara.
Oh, my.
Where's my phone? Oh, yeah. Running her fingers through his dark, curly hair, which she had first took his hat off so she could. Then as a knock come at the door... Boy, is this realistic. Then there's a knock come at the door.
Look, Arthur, I hate to disillusion you, but that was a knock at the door.
Oh. Well, it's plagiarism, that's what it is. Come in.
For goodness sakes, Abigail Uppington.
Ah, how do you do, my dear? I'm Mr. McGee.
My dear Mrs. Uppington, what a charming surprise. Do come in. I say, Francois, chill another bottle of sparkling root beer for Madame. Oh, I say, this is jolly, isn't it? When was it we met last on the French Riviera, was it not? Ah, remember that romantic evening over the gaming tables at Monte Carlo? The night Fifi de Gumenac shot the Duke? Okay. I remember how the stars shone down like a million jewels on the velvet canopy of night.
Let's start over, Miss McGee. I wasn't here when the game started.
Listen, don't mind him, Abigail. He's writing a book and he thinks he's E. Follips Ippenheim or somebody.
Ah, yes. Fine chap, Ippenheim. I remember one afternoon we were sitting in a gay little cafe in the Latin Quarter. I remember it because I didn't know any Latin and Ippy didn't have a quarter. It's great, all those little experiences.
Come off your high horse, dearie, before it throws you.
Well, I find this very interesting, Mrs. McGee.
Didn't think I could write a book, eh?
I didn't think you could write, period.
Oh, he's been working like a little beaver, Abigail.
You betcha.
Chew a tree down and build a dam for the lady, little beaver.
Okay, deride. Laugh if you will, my fine feathered friends. But the time will come when you'll point to my picture in magazines and say, I know that man. That's Earl Stanley McGee, the author.
Who?
Earl Stanley McGee. That's my nom de prune.
I think you mean nom de plume, Miss McGee.
I mean nom de prune. I'm going to show the writing business some new wrinkles.
When you get the manuscript finished, dearie, let me give it to Uncle Dennis.
Oh? Is he acquainted with some publishers, my dear?
Well, I think he is. I've often heard him say he knows every bookmaker in the country.
You know, I suppose, that you should have a literary agent, Miss McGee.
A literary what?
A literary agent. Someone to act as middleman for you, to make good arrangements with some publishing house, to protect your rights. You artistic people are so unbusinesslike, you know.
Oh, yes, I suppose we are. We authors live in a world of dreams, Abigail. We're shy and practical creatures. We should be shielded from the cruder, the harsher aspects of life.
Oh, my. Could you face the crude fact that your fountain pen is dripping on your pants leg, dear?
Huh? Oh. Hey, Uppy, I thought you joined up with the wax. When do you go?
I don't go, Miss McGee. I was declined with thanks.
Oh, that's too bad, Abigail. I'm so sorry.
Now, that's a shame, kid. They shouldn't ought to have turned down a big, sensible girl like you. What was wrong?
Mr. McGee, there was a time when I would have approached the answer to that question with some trepidation.
Yes?
I would have evaded a direct reply with all the delicate finesse at my command.
Yes?
But the cold, brutal fact remains that I'm too darn old. Goodbye.
The book coming along, Earl?
Who?
Earl. I thought that was your nom de prune. Earl Stanley McGee.
Oh, yes. Oh, I say, I think I'm coming along rather well, you know. Top hole and all that. Working on a jolly situation at the moment. This lieutenant lad, Fragwell, you know. Frightfully decent chap. Oxford and all that.
Oh, listen. Stop it. First thing I know, you'll start wearing a manacle.
If you mean eyeglass, my dear girl, the word is barnacle.
It's no such a thing. A barnacle is a seashell that sticks to the bottom of a boat.
I thought that was a binnacle.
A binnacle is a collarbone.
That's my clavicle.
Well, then a binnacle is where they keep a ship's compass.
You're thinking of a monocle.
Well, then what are manacles?
Handcuffs.
That's what I said. You want to be arrested for murder?
What's mean?
Well, you're killing me with that English accent.
You answer the phone, will you, Molly? I got Lieutenant Fragwell at the bottom of a 40-foot cistern, and I got to figure a way to get him out.
Well, let his girlfriend hold a big sirloin steak over the edge. I'd jump 40 feet for that myself.
Well, in this case, Molly Newsom's to telephone. Hello, Fibber McGee speaking. Who? Oh, yes. This is Earl Stanley McGee, the novelist. Oh, how do you do, Miss Cheltenham?
Miss who?
Oh, that would be jolly, of course, of course. I should be happy to discuss the matter. Oh, rather. Yes, I shall carry on till you get here. Pip, pip.
You keep carrying on like that, and I'll get the pip myself. Who's Miss Cheltenham?
She's an agent, a literary agent. She's going to sell my book. Ain't that wonderful?
How'd she ever hear about you? Through a Ouija board?
All the word gets about these things. Hey, I got to get busy. Now, don't let anybody bother me. Lock the door. This may mean millions.
Yeah, but how are you getting Lieutenant Fragwell out of the cistern?
Easy. I just start the next chapter by saying, once safely out of the cistern, Fragwell made his way to the nearest Barumba.
What's a Barumba?
That's an Abyssinian word meaning railroad.
Do the Abyssinians know that?
They will when they read the book. Now, remember, Molly, I got to work fast. I ain't home to anybody. If the doorbell bell rings, don't tell them.
I'm afraid Lieutenant Barumba will have to wait in the Fragwell for a minute, dearie. Come in.
Hello there, kids. What you doing?
I'm trying to write a book if I can get some peace and quiet around here.
Well, you go right ahead, Johnny. Me and daughter won't let anybody bother you.
Fine.
Trying to be a storybook writer once myself. But the grammar got me.
Oh.
Teacher says I didn't know a subject from a pelican.
You mean a predicate?
I do? Ain't a predicate one of them little salty crackers that you get with a glass of beer?
That's a pretzel.
Well, they're dangerous things. Grandpa had one go off right in his face once. Didn't know it was loaded. It was an old horse pretzel that he had.
Now, wait a minute. Don't you mean horse pistol?
I sure do, daughter. Grandpa was in the horse pistol for 3 weeks. The day nurse and night nurse.
That's a hospital.
Yes, sir. Most hospital folks Grandpa ever lived with.
I think you mean they were hospitable.
No, they took his chewing tobacco away from him when he went in. Grandpa always said...
Look, old-timer, look. Can't you stop changing the subject?
No, I can't, Johnny. Teacher always told me I couldn't tell a subject from a pelican.
Listen, but you don't mean pelican.
Why don't I?
Because a pelican is a big bird.
You're telling me, Johnny. Teacher gave me a bird so big it blew me out of school and I never went back. Well, I won't bother you, Johnny. So long, Dora.
All right, Earl Stanley McStuff. You go to work on your masterpiece, and I'll stand here and guard the door like voracious at the bridge.
You mean Horatius. Voracious means having a big appetite.
Well, this whole thing is strictly from hunger.
Oh.
So you get busy, and I'll...
Hello, folks. Am I intruding?
Oh, frankly, old chap, yes, you are. I say, old fellow, would you mind frightfully old radish if I ask you to stop by another time? That's a good fellow.
What's the matter with him, Molly? Did he fall asleep in a Ronald Coleman movie?
He's writing a book, Mr. Wilcox. He thinks that phony Piccadilly accent gives him a certain air.
It does. Why don't you open a window?
Oh, now I say, old broom.
Stop it, Molly. You sound like some dentist that just fitted you with a London bridge.
Molly, what's this about him writing a book?
Well, let me tell you about it, Junior. You see, my hero, Lieutenant Fragwell of the Navy...
The Navy?
Yeah.
Hey, could you say something about Battleship, Linoleum, and then sneak in a few words about Johnson's glow coat?
This is a novel, Wilcox, not an advertising folder. Anyway, he falls in love with a girl named Maisie Laprine because she reminded him of his mother.
And you remind me of my mother.
Oh. McGee reminds you of your mother, Miss Wilcox?
Yes. When he's happy and excited like this, he acts just like my mother used to when she was telling somebody about glow coat. How easy it was to use, now it shines as it dries.
Are you going to let me tell about my book?
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, just as Fragwell and Maisie are on their way to the house to get married, up comes a messenger in a cloud of dust.
So what's a little dust? Oh. With Johnson's glow coat, dirt and dust, wipe right up with a damn glow. And anyway, glow coat protects.
You better let him go on, Mr. Wilcox. He's turning green.
Oh, pardon me. Well, then what, Fibber?
It's a message for Lieutenant Fragwell to report for duty. The marriage is off. He's been called back into the service.
Well, the service is an important thing. If you protect the surface of your linoleum against dirt and wear, it'll almost last forever because glow coat is the
finest... I didn't say surface. I said service. C-E-R-V-I-S-E. Service. You see, Fragwell is a West Pointer.
Now, hold on, wait a minute, McGee. If Lieutenant Bragwell was in the Navy, why did he go to West Point?
Ah, wouldn't Hitler like to know that?
Military secrets. Hey, where are you going, Junior?
Don't you want to hear the finish, Mr. Wilcox?
No, I don't think I do, Molly. You see, I'm so used to sparkling, gleaming, immaculate wax coating that Johnson's Glow Coat gives, it spoiled me for inferior finishes.
Oh.
Well, I'll see you again.
Of all the unappreciative, inferior finishes my clavicle. I tell you, the ending of my book has got a wallop that'll tear your heart out.
Well, what is it?
I don't dare tell. But get this, Molly. After the book ends, I'm inserting 3 pages of crossword puzzles.
Oh.
Just to give the readers a chance to calm down.
Oh.
This book has got such a smash climax that I don't want to be responsible for people going hayseed.
You mean Haywire.
I thought Haywire was a movie actor.
That's Hayworth.
What is Hayworth?
By the bail?
I'll buy the bail if it's cheaper.
Oh, pop!
What are we talking about?
Come in, thank goodness.
Good afternoon. I'm
sorry, sis. Whatever it is, we don't want any. We got all the linens we need. And if it's magazines, you're wasting your time because I...
Are you Mr. McGee?
Yes, I am, sis. And let me tell you again.
I am Virginia Cheltenham, the literary agent.
Oh, gee, if I don't even... Oh, my gosh.
Got caught with your accent down, didn't you, dearie? Come in, Miss Virginia Ham.
Cheltenham. Virginia Cheltenham. I suppose you're a mighty proud girl to have a father who could write a book.
She ain't my father. I'm her mother. Oh, excuse me. Miss Cheltenham, my wife, Molly.
How do you do, I'm sure.
Your wife? Oh, how splendid. Let me tell you something about myself, Mr. McGee. I am a literary agent of long standing.
Oh. Have a chair, Chelt?
I beg your pardon. Oh, yes, thank you.
Yes.
Mr. McGee, are you familiar with serial rights, motion picture rights, dramatic rights, foreign translations, and the other 100 things regarding which a busy author must protect himself?
Heavenly day. And I thought an author just wrote a book and took his money and boom, that was that.
No, I never knew there was so much to it, Miss... sis.
Well, they are all very important.
Uh-huh.
I was having tea one afternoon with, now, let me see. There was Red and Jack and Elle and Ernie.
Who are they?
That's Red Lewis, of course. Sinclair Lewis, you know.
Oh, yes. I read his book, Aerosmith. Yeah. Disappointed, though. No Indians in it. Who are them other guys?
That's Ellery Queen. Ernie Hemingway and Jack Steinbeck.
Oh. Yeah. Did you ever do any business with Charlie and Vic?
Who, Mrs. McGee?
Charlie and Vic. You know, Charlie Dickens and Vic Hugo.
Okay. Well, Miss Cheltenham, now here's about my book. This Lieutenant Bragwell...
I shall want to read the manuscript myself, Mr. McGee.
Well, it ain't finished. Pardon me. I got 3 chapters to go.
Well, I'll take it as is. A manuscript needn't necessarily be complete to make a sale, you know.
Oh, swell. Well, this Lieutenant Bragwell...
Now, my usual business procedure is this, Mr. McGee.
Yes?
I take full responsibility for the promotion and sale of all rights in your literary work.
Oh, I see.
You are...
Did you say Miss Cheltenham took the manuscript with her?
Yeah, and you know what? First, she's going to sell it to maybe a magazine like the Red Book or maybe Time Magazine.
Time Magazine doesn't run novels.
Well, she says they will when they see this one. It's going to make history, she says. And then she says she'll sell it to maybe Random House as a book. You know them. They printed that book, I Lost My Garters.
Oh.
And she...
I Lost My Garters. I don't remember that book.
Oh, well, maybe that wasn't exactly... Oh, no, it was The Last Time I Saw Paris.
Oh.
Into a Broadway play and then sell it to the movies. Why, gee whiz, we might... Hey, maybe that's a messenger with a check from some publisher. Maybe $1,000.
Now, don't start counting your chickens just because you've laid an egg, dearie. Come in. Well, Mr. Wimple.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, Mr. McGee.
Hi, Wimple, old man. How's everything? Have a cigar. Take 2. I'm getting some better ones anyway.
Oh, no, thank you, Mr. McGee. My wife doesn't permit me to smoke.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Wimple?
Not at all, Mrs. McGee. She thinks, anyway. But I fool her sometimes.
You do, eh?
Yes. Maybe when you have corn on the cob next summer, you'll save me the corn silk.
You smoke corn silk?
Yes. But don't look so shocked, Mrs. McGee. I don't inhale. But why are you wearing that green eyeshade, Mr. McGee?
I've been writing a book, Wimp. Going to make me a fortune, too. I'll send you an autographed copy. I do the lighthearted, gay, sophisticated stuff, like Somersault Maugham.
Somerset, McGee.
Yeah, I know. Some are a little set, but I ain't. I can write like Somersault Maugham or anybody else.
Oh, that's the sort of thing I always wanted to write before I turned to see this.
Incidentally, Mr. Wimple, why did he call it free verse?
Did you ever try to sell any of it?
Well, no, I never have.
You ever do any serious writing, Wimp? You know, I might be able to give you a few pointers. Plot, motivation, and all stuff like that there.
Oh, I did do one short story, Mr. McGee, when I was single.
Mm-hmm.
I called it The Dreamer.
Oh, that's nice.
Then I wrote a sequel to it after Sweetie Face and I were married.
Oh. What was the title of that?
The Awakening.
You know, Mr. Wimple, you don't look very well. Have you been ill?
Oh, no, Mrs. McGee. I'm really quite... Oh, I guess you didn't hear about my terrible experience.
What was that, Wallace?
You know that horrible rainstorm we had last week?
Yes.
Well, I was nearly drowned. I must have swallowed 5 gallons of water.
Well, don't you know enough to come in out of the rain, Wimp?
Oh, I was in, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
I didn't stir one little tippy-toe outdoors all night.
Well, then how did you swallow all that water?
Oh, our ceiling started to leak like everything, and Sweetie Face said, "Oh, Wallace, what'll I do?" And I said, "Put a pan under it, silly." And she did. Mine.
Now, that was a dirty trick, Wimp. One of these days, that woman is going to go too far.
Yes, and I hope she stays there.
You know what I'm going to do with the first $50,000 I make off my book? I'm going to buy...
Tell me later, dearie. I've got to take these tea things out.
You wait, Molly. One of these days, you'll look back and wonder how we could live in a dump like this. Ah, there's a little woman that's going to have a dozen pairs of silk stockings if I have to stand over those silkworms with a horsewhip. Yes, sir. She don't... Oh, come in, come in, come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hello there, little girl. Did you hear about my book?
Hmm?
I said, did you hear about my book?
You got a book?
What do you mean if I got a book? I just wrote one. I'm an author.
You're another what?
Not another anything. I says I'm an author. I wrote a book about a young naval lieutenant named Tragwell who falls in love with a girl.
Well, gee, why do you think he'd fall in love with a horse?
Don't be so fresh, kid. Remember, a hairbrush ain't exactly obsolete as part of a child's education.
I don't get it.
One more smart crack and you will.
Oh.
Now, look, haven't you got any place to go but here?
Sure. I gotta go down to the Bonton department store and return these tiddlywinks.
What's the matter with them?
Too much tiddly and not enough wings.
Well, look, let me tell you more about my book. You see this Lieutenant Tragwell?
Show me a picture, mister. Please, will you please?
Oh, I'm sorry, sis. I used up all the paper right in my book. I
Here.
Can't
worry. Well, draw it on the back of this piece of paper, mister.
Oh, okay, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first I'll draw up.
Yeah.
Hey, where'd you get this piece of paper?
Hmm?
This is part of my book.
I found it.
What?
It was in that green box down by the corner. You know, the one that says, "Help keep our city clean." See, it's just full of papers like this, mister.
It's full of papers? Mm-hmm. You mean my book is stuffed into a trash can? Oh, no, no. You're kidding, ain't you, sis? Tell me you're kidding.
Yeah, and get that hairbrush?
No, no, this is terrible. Hey, Molly.
I heard the whole thing, McGee.
Oh, this is all a mistake. Where's that agent's phone number? I'll call her.
I already called it, and there isn't any such number. You better go home, little girl.
Yeah, beat it, sis. I'll see you later.
Okay, mister.
Oh, boy.
I knew that woman was no good.
Who, me?
No. Not you, sis.
Oh, goody. Goodbye.
Oh. All that work for nothing. My career.
How much money did she take you for, me?
Well, gee whiz, she sounded legitimate.
How much did she get?
Well, she asked me for $500 to promote the book, advertising and stuff.
How much did you give her?
Then she come down to $250, and I said...
How much did she get?
All I had. $27.75.
Oh, what a fool I've been.
Well, it was a pretty cheap lesson at that.
Huh?
Now forget it and tell me what you want for supper.
Oh, am I ever the chumperoo?
Yes, dearie, I know. But what do you want for supper?
Ah, put some oats in a pail.
What?
Yeah. As long as I made a jackass out of myself, I might as well eat like one.
Thank you.
Have you noticed an increase in neighborliness in recent months? With less driving around, there's more visiting back and forth. I'm sure that in many homes tonight, friends and neighbors are sitting around listening to this program together. The makers of Johnson's Wax are glad they can bring Fibber and Molly into your home. And they want me to thank you again for your continued loyalty to all Johnson's Wax products. All of us on the show are happy to be working for a company whose products are so helpful in these times. The regular use of Johnson's Wax protects your floors, furniture, and woodwork at a time when conservation is so vital. It saves you many hours of work when manpower and woman power are so important. And besides, it makes your home more beautiful and more sanitary, because a waxed home is a clean home.
Say, old girl, this has been quite a day, eh, what? Jolly old novel gone up the spout and all that.
Oh, stop it. Huh? You sound like a bundle from Britain delivered by mistake.
Oh, I don't get it, old girl.
You keep calling me old girl and you'll get it, all right.
Hey, oh, tally-ho.
Good night, all.
Fibber McGee and Molly on Tuned to Yesterday from January 26th, 1943, an NBC episode. You are listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. We move on now to the Jack Benny program from February 27th, 1955 on CBS. This is actually one of two repeats of this particular program, first recorded in December 1954 and later rebroadcast in October 1957. At the time when this radio series was on the air, Jack Benny was branching out into television, producing yearly and bi-monthly specials, so you may hear a reference to television coming up next on The Jack Benny Show.
The Jack Benny Program. The Lucky Strike Program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Rose. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to take you back to Thursday evening at the CBS radio studios. The Jack Benny Show has just finished its weekly rehearsal.
All right, fellas, that's about it. But before anybody leaves, I want to check some things. Hey, Malin.
Yes, Jack?
I'd like you to rehearse the opening music with the boys. I'd like the tempo picked up a little. You know?
Okay. I intended to have another orchestra rehearsal anyway.
I want to stay and go over my song once more.
Oh, fine, Dennis. Now, Don.
Yes, Jack?
One little thing. Every time we rehearsed that joke on page 12, you broke up and laughed through the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Don, you're supposed to play that straight. You're supposed to do it with sincerity. It's not funny when you laugh.
Jack, I can't help laughing. It is funny.
Well, let's try it once more, Don. This time, play it straight. Let's rehearse it once more. It's on the bottom of page 12. Right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Now, take it, Don. Now, don't laugh.
You know, ever since I was born, my father wanted me to be a jockey.
Oh, Don, that's silly. Jockeys only weigh about 90 pounds.
Well, that's exactly what I weighed when I was born.
For heaven's sake, you laughed all the way through it again.
Well, Jack, I just can't help it. It's so ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
Yeah, when I was born, I weighed 120 pounds.
How do you like that? And I paid a writer $9 for that joke. Now, fellas, we'll have another script rehearsal tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
Can't you make it later, Jack? I've got to get a haircut tomorrow morning.
Well...
Oh, Mr. Benny, I have to get a haircut, too.
Hey, that's a coincidence. I have to get a haircut, too.
Hmm. The only thing I can't stand is a bunch of show-offs. Look, fellas, we've scheduled the rehearsal for tomorrow morning. Why do you have to waste time like that?
Oh, it's not a waste of time, Jack. Don't you get haircuts when your hair gets too long?
He has Rochester wash it and it shrinks.
Dennis, I suppose you thought that was funny.
Yes, sir.
I agree with him, Jack.
Oh, you agree with him, eh, Don?
Yeah. According to the greatest authorities on comedy, the basic ingredient of all humor is the blunt insult.
Really, Don?
Yes.
Well, shut up, blubber bucket. Is that blunt enough? Let's see. Dennis, if you're ready to rehearse your song now, I'd like to hear it.
Oh, my throat is a little dry. I think I'll get a Coke first.
Oh, well, Malin, why don't you let the boys in the band take a little break?
Yeah. Okay, fellas, take five.
He meant 5 minutes, not three.
What a bunch of guys.
Go ahead, fellas, take a 5 minute break.
Oh, say, Malin, I've noticed something. Every time the boys and the band leave, Sammy the drummer stays behind. Now, why doesn't he go with them?
Well, Sammy doesn't like to mix with them. They're always insulting him and saying mean things about him.
See, I've noticed that, too. Why didn't he stick up for himself and answer him back?
Oh, he's afraid to.
Afraid to? But Sammy's the biggest guy in the band. Is he a coward?
Not exactly, but you see, he's been down on his hands and knees so long, he thinks everybody is 10 feet tall.
Gee. He must think the piano is the Golden Gate Bridge. Well, that's about all. I'm going to my dressing room. Malin, let me know about those new arrangements as soon as they're ready, will you?
Okay, Jack, I'll call you. What's your number at home again?
Crestview 40555.
Crestview 40555.
That's right. See you tomorrow, fellas.
Oh, I'll walk with you, Mr. Benny. I'm going out in the hall for a drink.
Okay, kid. Gee, the studio sure looked nice and bright since they replastered and painted the walls.
Yeah.
They? Must have cost a lot of money.
It cost $4,629.92.
Dennis, how'd you know the exact amount?
My mother was foreman on the job.
Well, here's the Coke machine. You said you wanted to get one.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. Oh, here's a dime. Nothing came out.
Dennis, don't beat on the machine like that. You'll break it.
But I put my dime in and nothing came out.
Well, that's the chance you take.
Oh. Say, wait a minute. Here's a sticker on the machine. It says, for repairs, call Crestview 40555.
See you later, Dennis.
Hey, wait a minute. That's your number.
Don't be such a bad loser. I'm going to my dressing room. Well, I'll get all my things out of here, out of my dressing room, and then I'll... Yes, miss?
Say, what are you doing here?
Miss, this happens to be my dressing room.
Mister, either you can't read or you ought to get your glasses fixed.
It's my dressing room. It's been converted.
I'm sorry.
Well, I guess I'll get my things together. First, I better call the parking lot and have them push my car around to the front. It takes longer now that a wheel is missing. Hello, this is Mr. Benny. Will you please bring my car around to the front? Thank you. Well, I might as well go now. I think I'll go to the studio and say goodbye to the gang. So long, fellas.
Oh, Mr. Benny, I thought you'd gone home.
I'm just leaving. Can I drop you at your house?
No, I'm going to the doctor across the street. I'm getting a treatment for water on my knee.
Oh, gee, Dennis, I didn't know you had water on the knee.
Well, I have, and it bothers me a lot, especially at night.
At night?
Yeah, the splashing keeps me awake. It's at its worst about 3 a.m.
Why?
That's when the tide comes in.
Don, you see, Don, you shouldn't have asked him. I was going to ignore the silly kid. He's making the whole thing up. He hasn't got water on the knee, probably never had it.
Oh, yes, I have. I got it when my mother dropped me when she was giving me a bath.
When you were a baby?
No, last week.
Now, cut that out! I'm leaving now. And Malin, don't forget to call me about those arrangements. So long, fellas.
How'd you enjoy your dinner, Mr. Benny?
That was very good, Rochester, and I'll have my coffee.
Here you are. Would you like a little cognac in your coffee?
I would, but have we got any cognac?
Yeah, I squeezed out that fruitcake you got for Christmas.
I'm glad you squeezed that joke out, finally. Thought we weren't going to get it there for a minute. Huh? Well, good, good. That's my next line. Good, good.
Say, boss, yeah. After I finish the dishes, can I have the rest of the night off?
I guess so. Have you got a date?
Yeah. I'm going over to my girlfriend Susie's house to watch television. It's so nice and cozy there. Just the two of us on the sofa with the lights dimmed down.
Say, this will be the third time this week you've been there. Have there been any good shows on television this week?
Who knows? Their set's broken.
Okay, Rochester, you can have the night off, but be sure you're home at a reasonable hour.
You're reasonable or am I reasonable?
Never mind. Just don't be so late. That...
Want me to answer the phone, boy?
No, you finish the dishes. I'll get it in the den. His reasonable or my reasonable? Never forget last New Year's Eve. He went out. He didn't come in till 5. February 5. I'm going to have a long talk with him. Hello?
Hi, Jack. This is Malin Merrick.
Oh, have you got those musical arrangements I asked for?
Well, I was bringing them over with Remley, but he had to stop off here at a gas station to get filled up.
Oh, well, wait a minute. I didn't know Frankie had a car.
He hasn't. He'll drink anything.
Oh.
I'll try and get them over soon.
Okay, goodbye. Hey, imagine Frankie getting high on gasoline. I hope it's mobile gas, then everybody can look for the sign of the flying red guitar player. Gosh, what a bunch of guys those musicians are. I don't know why I keep them around. They can't play music. A lot of times they don't even bother showing up for the program. Well, they do show up, the condition they're in. Now that I think of it, those fellas haven't sobered up once in all the years they've been with me. If they ever start cashing their checks, I'm going to fire them. I don't know why... Say, what's this message here on the phone? It's in Rochester's handwriting. Daryl Zanuck called. Oh, Rochester! Rochester, what's this message about Mr. Zanuck calling?
Oh, yes, Mr. Benny. He phoned this afternoon from 20th Century Fox Studios.
What did he want? What did he want? What? 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 What?
You owe him a dime. Their Coke machine is out of order.
Oh, well, you know what to do. Send him the questionnaire he has to fill out and the 6 form letters he has to sign in front of a notary public.
But, boss, nobody will go through all that just to get a dime back.
I know. Da-da-dee-da-dum,
da-dee-da-dum. Are you going out to a movie tonight, Mr. Benny?
No, there's some good wrestling on television tonight, and I want to watch it. Hey, look what time it is. I better turn the set on, or I'll miss the main event.
Well, while you're watching TV, I'll go back in the kitchen and finish my work.
Okay, Rochester. Well, the set's warming up. I think I'll get comfortable here in this chair. Hey, what's this picture coming on? Those 4 fellas look like the Sportsman Quartet.
Now, for their next number, the Sportsman Quartet will sing No Business Like Show Business from the 20th Century Fox picture of the same name.
The butcher, the baker, the grocer, the clerk, know we're the sportsmen on the radio. We've muttered, we've stuttered, and we've gone berserk to make our Lucky Strike commercials go. What we do to a song is really sad. What other business pays you to be bad? Till the end of time, we'll be haunted by this line. Smoke a Lucky from Kentucky, they're just ducky. Yes, and they're all mine. No, our sponsor thought that it was fine. We mentioned Lucky Strikes in every line. There's no business like show business, like no business we know. Everything about it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. As for
money we get hardly any. We work for Benny right up till now. There's no trouble like our trouble when we try to collect. We'd be better off if we were home in bed, but no, not us, it's TV instead. We hope Benny never hears a word we said. Let's go on with the show. There's no cigarette, none you can get like Luckies we know. Luckies are the smoke that you will treasure. Luckies have that better taste you like. There's no way we know to really measure the smoking pleasure in Lucky Strike. They're clean through and through, much fresher too, so smooth as you know. Lucky Strike means by tobacco, you'll agree, a toasted cigarette there for me. Now's the time to light an LSMFT. You'll like Luckies we know. Yes, you'll like Luckies we know.
Gee, that was real good.
This concludes another program of music sponsored by the Shamrock Hotel in Houston, Texas. For reservations, call the clerk right at the hotel. The number is Houston 69038. 5764894102736 415.
Gee, everything's so big down in Texas. What a number.
Oh, correction, please. I've just been notified that for reservations at the Shamrock Hotel, you're to call the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas. The Flamingo has just won the Shamrock.
That's silly. I better get the channel the wrestling matches are on.
Well, that was an exciting bout.
That's it.
Hey, now, before we telecast the main event, here's a word from our sponsor, the friendly Credit Clothing Store.
Yes, men, if you need slacks, suits, sport jackets, or any other wearing apparel, get them at the friendly Credit Clothing Store. No money down, just pay $1 a week. And remember, these clothes are guaranteed not for months, not for years, but for life. They have to be because that's how long you'll be paying. Now back to the wrestling matches.
And now we're ready for the main event. Both wrestlers are now in the ring. The contestants are Lord Featherstone and Professor Lamont, who is known as the absent-minded professor.
Gosh, what big fellows they are.
The referee has summoned the men to the center of the ring. Featherstone has taken off his robe and his trunks are black with a white stripe. Now the professor is taking off his robe and his trunks are... Well, he really is absent-minded.
I'll say he is. Oh, the match is about to start. This should be good.
There's the bell. The men advance to the center of the ring and start circling around each other as they...
What happened to the picture? The set went off. I wonder what's wrong with it. Oh, Rochester! Rochester!
Yes, boss?
I was watching television. All of a sudden, the set went off.
Maybe you made a short circuit when you dropped in the coin.
That set's in the guest room. It's probably just a loose wire. You try and fix it. I'm going to get the wrestling matches on radio.
Yes, sir.
See, I don't even know what radio station it's on. Let's see.
Please don't leave me, Joe. Please. I've been a good wife to you, although I'll admit that I've nagged a little. Never had your dinner ready when you came home at night. Never made the beds in the morning and let the furniture stay dusty.
That's not it. That's a soap opera. Maybe it's around here somewhere. That's it.
And Dusty Rhodes has just hit a home run into the right field stands, and the Giants defeat Cleveland in the first game of the World Series.
This program was transcribed earlier for release at this more convenient time.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, where are those wrestling matches?
We played the game of stay away.
But it costs more than I could pay. Without you, I can't find my way. I surrender, dear.
Boy, would she stump the experts on what's my line. Rochester, how are you coming along with the television set? I can't get the program on radio.
Well, I've looked all over the set. I can't see anything wrong.
But it just went off suddenly. Say, maybe the wire's been kicked loose where it's plugged in.
You want me to go over to the Coleman's house and see?
Look, never mind the joke. Just see if you can fix the set. I'll try the radio again.
And sometimes I forget to sew buttons on your shirt. And leave a sink full of dirty dishes. Spend too much money on clothes, neglect the children, burn your toast in the morning.
Hmm. Maybe it's lower on the dial here.
And now, fellow members of the Ladies Auxiliary, it is my pleasure to present our guest of honor.
Ladies, it's a pleasure to be with you today. And as a member of the local Chamber of Commerce, I feel it's my duty to defend our fair community against these disparaging remarks about the smog conditions in the Los Angeles area. They say that smog is a menace, but I am proud to say that I was born in this community and have lived here for 36 years. I'll admit we do... we do have a very minor problem. But they would have you believe that there hangs over the... Humans would take the atmosphere. And restrict visibility. Now this is a ridiculous untruth. Which I deny. Close that window and turn on the air conditioning.
See, I get everything but what I want to listen to. Where are the wrestling matches?
I may seem proud.
Oh, for
I may act gay. It's just a pose.
I don't want that.
I'm not that way.
Her, the smog doesn't hurt at all. Why can't I get the wrestling matches here?
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar.
Thank you, Mark Anthony.
What?
This news program was transcribed earlier for release at this more convenient time.
Well, this I don't understand at all.
We'll bury Caesar in just a minute. First, a word from our sponsor.
For heaven's sake. Rochester, can't you get that television set fixed?
I'm fixing it.
What's wrong with this radio set here? I want to get the wrestling matches.
Sometimes I'd stay out too late at night.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And I always have accidents while driving your car. And I lose the rent money paying canasters.
Oh.
And I'll admit that I've let myself become sloppy. But you're not going to leave me, are you, Joe?
Yes!
Gosh, Joe had a big part. Why can't I get the wrestling matches?
Ooh, has this been exciting?
I've got it.
Yes, this has been the most exciting wrestling match we've ever seen. You've just heard a statement from the winner of the match, and now coming up to our microphone for an interview is the loser. Now, you lost the match when the referee gave you the submission signal. Now, can you tell us why you gave up?
He broke my arm, tore out my hair, and it was more than I could bear. When he stomped on my neck, I had to say, I surrender here.
Well, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. I'm going to a movie. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Brotherhood Week, sponsored by the National Conference of Christians and Jews. 7 days set aside to remind us of our responsibility to our neighbors every week of the year. It's a reminder that this country was built by people of every race, every creed, and every color. That mixture has been our strength. Let's keep America strong by living brotherhood. Let's keep it one nation under God. Thank you.
Jack will be back in just a minute, but right now, here's a suggestion for you.
Gee, boss, it's a shame the wrestling matches were over before I could get the television set fixed.
Yeah. Well, gosh, it's too early to go to bed. I know what I'll do. There's an all-night supermarket down on the corner, and I'll go down there now and buy our Thanksgiving turkey.
That's a good idea, boss.
This program was transcribed earlier for release at this more convenient time.
Yeah. Good night.
The Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Hal Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
Jack Benny on Tuned to Yesterday from February 27th, 1955 on CBS. That wraps up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.